Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another very good, very, very good episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast that we record every single week from King's Comics, which you can find at 310 Pitt Street in Sydney. Did I get the address right?
Yeah, I think you did.
I rely on Siobhan for that. Usually this is a podcast about comic books that is co-hosted by two people. One of them is me. My name is Andrew Levins. My co-host usually is Siobhan Coombs, but she had a baby.
Yeah, go figure, man. Decided to take some time off for absolutely awful reasons. But yeah.
Yeah, so she's not going to be at King's for a few months. She's going to take a shorter absence from the podcast because she still wants to read all the comics. Good luck to her, I say, trying to fit it in while being a mum. It's a bit easier when you're a dad, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
In her place this week, look, huge request. People were like, you know, we put the feelers out. Who should fill in for Siobhan while she's away the first week after having a kid? Welcome to her kid, by the way, Shatterstar Coombs.
Yeah, just go Shatterstar Boom Boom Liefeld the Third, to be precise.
Look, our listeners just yelled this name above everyone else's name, the Oracle of Serious Issues. You may have heard us scream, or Siobhan especially, scream his name during each podcast whenever we
can't. In a bad way.
No, whenever we can't think of an answer, we always ask Jim for help. So joining us from King's Comics, it's the one and only Jim. I'm not going to attempt your last name.
Even I won't attempt it.
Can you though?
I just, you know what? In Greek, it pretty much translates into Smith. So, you know. Hey, everybody. It's heaps awesome to be here.
Jim from King's. Jim, how many centuries have you worked at King's for?
Oh, man. Believe it or not, almost 20 years. Yeah, I still find that hard to believe that they haven't found a reason to fire my ass. But I'm here, and I'm trying to fill Siobhan's tiny shoes in for this week.
And you know, those people who shop at King's know that you're somewhat of a backbone of the store, doing a bulk of all the ordering. Yeah. Everything on the shelves is here because you ordered it.
So what he's trying to say is, if we don't have it, it's my fault. Yeah.
We enjoy asking impossible questions to you during each podcast, and you generally have the answers.
Yeah, and the answer is usually Savage Dragon.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, give us a little primer on you, your favorite kind of comics before we delve into these reviews.
Oh man, look, it's really hard to say because after all these years, my tastes have changed so much. Mm-hmm. You know, starting off with your usual capes and tights sort of stuff. I love. And still do love reading, you know, DC Comics. Batman has been my kind of mainstay. Hellboy and, you know, not so weirdly enough, Savage Dragon all these years. I'm obviously kind of not reading as many superhero books as I used to, but I still try to keep on top of everything as we go along.
You're the big European comic pusher on Siobhan.
I do. I love European comics. I mean, I discovered them maybe 7 or 8 years ago reading a lot of kind of meta barons sort of stuff, and then just expanded from there. So I do try to push that onto Siobhan. Readers, yeah, especially Siobhan. She needs to expand her horizons a little bit. You know, there's more to comics, I think, than just Shatterstar.
Which European comic book character did you think she should have named her baby after?
that's a tough one. I'm
Black
not
Sad?
Sure. I don't know, man. Right now I'm reading Valerian, so maybe something out of that. Not entirely sure.
So today on the show, Jim is going to be joining me for the beginning of this show, our segment First Things First, in which we review all of the new number ones that came out last week. And we're going to kick things off by reviewing Dark Days, the casting.
I don't know. it's certainly
this is a mistake already.
Man.
Prelude to Metal is the big event that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo will eventually do together. But right now we have a comic, another issue, co-written by Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV, with shared art duties by pencils by Jim Lee,
Andy Kubert,
John and John Romita Jr. And then a whole realm of inkers and colorists throughout this book. It's an enormous creative team on this book, and indeed an enormous book, an enormous story.
Yeah,
continuing, what was the first one of these?
The Forge.
The Forge, which we really loved, and it was
was a lot of fun.
It felt like them bringing back a lot of things that I miss about DC. A lot of the older stuff, you know, you've got a Hawkman kind of centered title with, you know, we had teasers of Plastic Man returning, the Blackhawks.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess the guys at DC are doing the same thing in this one-shot as well. Although the casting one-shot just felt kind of a lot more dense than The Forge. This was a hard... Well, not a hard read, but it was a harder read than I guess The Forge was. But still, they do tend to throw in a couple of surprises for you. So I'm not sure if... what are we going to do? Are we going to do spoilers here?
Well, let's just say what the kind of overall book is about. It's Batman is basically like looking into the mystery of the nth metal. And this almost kind of... like this is the metal that, you know, is connected to Hawkman, the character of Hawkman, the character that comes back every cycle as a new character, kind of.
Sort of a new take on an old character.
Yeah, yeah.
Fighting the same fight he's been fighting with Hawk Woman or Hawk Girl for, you know, centuries.
And so, yeah, Batman is kind of like against, you know, everyone's better kind of judgment, including the Joker's better judgment.
Does the Joker have better judgment?
Apparently.
Okay.
He tries to be the good guy in this.
He's still a snazzy dresser. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. This is Batman kind of like trying to solve the greatest mystery of all that's linked to this metal that can be found in so many important artifacts in the DC universe.
And I think the other mystery is like, why is Hal Jordan such a dick? look, there's a lot of people out there who just don't like Hal as a Green Lantern anymore, maybe just because of the way he's being written or whatnot.
He's very righteous.
Yeah, yeah, he's very up there. He's very up himself, apparently. But, yeah, the way he's kind of treated in The Forge is kind of like, you know, he's almost got that Batman mentality, but on a galactic scale. It's like, you know, I know what I'm doing. Well, this is a way to go.
The Guardians have told him to go to the Batcave because there's something that's going to threaten the entire galaxy.
yes.
So you have this kind of weird team up between him and Duke Thomas, and then the Joker as well, who they fight, but Joker's not as kind of like bloodthirsty as he usually is.
Well,
like,
I think
he has a greater purpose.
Living in, you know, a sub-cellar of the Batcave has maybe, you know, toned him down a bit. We're not sure.
And then there's all kinds of other kind of big teasers of what's to come, coming back from DC. Looks like we're going to be getting a bit more Shazam stuff.
A bit more Challenges of the Unknown.
That's right.
Which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that like it's a very easy book to get lost in, and it required me to reread a few pages just to kind of get the full story. But I like it when books do that sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
These are legends that we're reading now. This is a 75-year-old franchise that has so much folklore that you can, you know, reference and bring back. And I think this is a very fun way to kind of celebrate the DC
universe. Yeah, especially if you're a fan of the kind of Detroit era of Justice League of America. There's a character that pops up halfway through the book that you're just going to go, hey, I haven't seen you in, you know, donkey's years.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. I like the way that DC are just kind of almost, you know, without thought, throwing in these characters saying, we're going to be using them. Guess what? you know, here's the rebirth version of this character or that character. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. I have some criticisms with what they've chosen to do with the artwork. So there's three, as you said, there's three pencillers on this. You know, three of the kind of highest paid pencillers at DC right now. You've got Jim Lee, Andy Kubert, and John Romita Jr. And, you know, this story is broken up. There are, you know, quite a few different plot lines. And so I would have thought if you have the three different pencillers, you assign each of them a plot line.
To a certain plot line, yeah, exactly.
But instead, like, it pretty much changes, like, every three pages.
Every three or four pages, it goes to a new penciler, but the kind of, the plot line still kind of continues. But it kind of, it makes the story stop and start a little bit. For me, anyway.
Like, Hubert's definitely the kind of common link between Jim Lee and Romita Jr. Like, I feel like he fits pretty well in between the two.
Yeah.
But when it jumps from Jim Lee to Romita Jr. or vice versa, it's so stark. And
it's
the same scene as well. Like, there are a few pages where it's like, you know, like on the left is Romita Jr. and on the right is Jim Lee. And it doesn't work.
No, I mean, because the thing is, you know, I think it's the same guy, the same person colouring the whole book. And when you're getting the, especially with Jim Lee, you know, the super crosshatch stuff and really, really nice looking detail comics, then you jump to John Romita Jr., who tends to be a, you know, less so. It can be a little jarring, but I think if you read it, this may take a second read, especially for me. Once you start reading it all in one shot, it may make more sense that way.
Yeah, and I think I've seen a lot of people in our in the Serious Issues Facebook group complaining about being quite lost in this.
Mm.
I think just keep at it. Like, if you're confused as to who a bunch of characters are, Google them. Or there are multiple guides to this.
I just remember reading way back in the day, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep,
and being mega confused even at that time. It was like, who's this? What's going on? And that was just with the one artist. I think this is kind of leading into that kind of event crossover thing as well, where we're going to have something pretty huge happening in this rebirth universe. And if you stick with it, fingers crossed, you know, it'll all come together and be a great read.
So is this the last kind of prelude before Metal starts?
Yeah, Metal's going to be starting after this for six issues.
Okay, sure.
There's also going to be a handful of Batman-related one-shots, Batman the Drowned, Batman the Dawnbreaker, etc., which is hinted on in the last pages of the casting. And there's also going to be a bunch of tie-ins, as crossovers usually have, but nowhere near the amount that we've seen in other events.
It feels nice and contained.
It does. It feels a lot more contained than what we would expect.
Yeah, you get like a, you know, you get a $4.99 cover price, you get a fancy-ish metallic cover.
Hmm.
You know, beyond that, there's no, you haven't got to read every single DC book to get the
full story. I think the tie-in books, because it's going to tie into titles like Nightwing,
right,
and Teen Titans and whatnot. I think those won't be necessary reads. If you just stick to the one-shots like this and casting, the six-issue miniseries, you should be right.
Hopefully having to tie into this book won't sabotage those already pretty good series.
Oh, God, I hope not, because, it works so well for Civil War 2.
Yeah. And Secret Empire right
now,
too.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, Dark Days, the casting. I don't think it was as good as the first Dark Days prelude book. The fuck was it called again?
The Forge.
The Forge, thank you.
Yeah.
It's still fun, and they're definitely building up to something epic, which I think is good.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
So DC also put out another number one this week, only it was through their Vertigo imprint, which is the saddest imprint on the shelves these days.
It's a shadow of its former self, man.
Like, I thought they were, like, after when they killed the Clean Room, the Gail Simone book, and then the Unfollow, two books that we both loved on the podcast, I was like, okay, that must be it. You know, you've got Astro City ticking away, but is there anything else besides that?
I mean,
is Lucifer still going?
Lucifer is still going, and there's a handful of miniseries going on here and there. But again, a lot of people have expressed this over the years as well. You know, ever since we had titles like Preacher and Transmetropolitan and whatnot stop, DC's Vertigo imprint just hasn't been what it was. They're trying. I mean, we've had the recent Sandman miniseries.
That's not recent anymore. That's like five years ago now.
Wow, really?
Three or four years ago?
Yeah. That's about as recent as I can remember of something being pretty epic coming out of Vertigo.
I mean, I love Sheriff of Babylon, the Tom King and true, Mitch true. Jarrett's things, and then the and the big fan of Unfollow as well, which unfortunately ended way too early. But,
We just don't have. I think it doesn't have that impact that it used to.
So we've got a return to an older. Is this an older Vertigo series?
This was a mini series 10 years ago.
Right. So the American Way, and it's written by John Ridley with pencils by George's
Gianti.
Yep, and inks by Danny Mickey, colors by Nick Filardi. So a pretty great. Great creative team.
Yeah, it was actually really, really cool. This was an easily, like a really easy, really cool read for me. And finding out that it was John Ridley, who there's an ad towards the back of it saying, you know, this is the guy that wrote 12 Years a Slave.
Right, yeah, sure.
You know, so and DC were also cluey enough to re-release the original American Way miniseries as a 10th anniversary trade paperback the same week this came out.
Had you read it back when it was coming
way
out?
Way back then, yeah.
Yeah, right, cool.
And I remember enjoying it. It was a neat take on the superhero genre. And, I mean, it really dug into the politics of the 60s in America.
Yep.
And we jump forward with this issue.
Yeah, it's one set in the 70s.
We're in the early 70s now.
This is called The American Way, Those Above and Those Below. And it looks like pretty much exactly the same, almost the same creative team.
Yeah, pretty much.
Carl Story did cover colors back in 10 years ago. It's very much about politics in America in the 70s, specifically racial politics. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of Southern politics as well. Basically, we check back in on these characters that I've not read the original series, so I'm still completely able to really enjoy this series. I definitely got a bit lost as it jumps from character to character in the first few pages, but by the end, I was kind of
there's enough. There's enough, I guess, backstory in this issue alone to give you at least a kind of a guiding.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know, to let you know who these characters were in the original miniseries and why they stopped being superheroes.
Yeah, it's a very well-written first issue, especially by someone who I don't think has done many comics since The American Way originally.
Not at all.
He's busy writing, you know, Hollywood blockbusters.
Yeah, award-winning.
Award-winning movies.
It's
a very well put together comic that even newcomers will be able to pick up and get.
And it's weird because I'm so used to George Gianti's artwork, say, you know, on his Buffy run and a couple of other things that I thought maybe his art wouldn't kind of suit this new miniseries, but it suits it down to the ground. And
Nick
great.
Nick Filardi's colours are phenomenal.
Oh, the colours are outstanding. Really, really great.
We have the first series, I imagine, was about a superhero team trying to exist in against the political landscape of the American 60s. Without spoiling too much, I gather that they aren't really a team by the end of that first series.
Well, a lot of things did happen. They weren't really a team to begin with,
right,
as well. They were government funded, and at the end of it, they were also kind of government pushed, because a lot of the stuff that they did was premeditated, and people did find out about it, and people did kind of start, you know, hating these characters.
Really?
Well, in the comics themselves. They felt betrayed.
Right, okay,
you know?
Sure.
So seeing these characters 10 or 12 years later.
All separate as well.
Like, yeah, none of them talk to each other.
Yep.
None of them have anything to do with each other, and all of them are ashamed of their pasts, you know, of what they did. So it's very much kind of these characters coming back, or at least some of these characters coming back and trying to make good with what with what they've done.
Yeah, and they all have their own. They all have different moral codes.
Yeah, that does not exclude killing.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I really enjoyed this first issue.
Yeah, definitely going to hit the second issue. This was great.
I feel so weird with Vertigo now, because it is like, you know, for a time it was like, you know, it's like almost that rite of passage. You read all these superhero books and then you see like, oh, I might delve into Vertigo, and then suddenly it's your favorite imprint ever.
It is, and I mean, Vertigo was always a great imprint for new readers because the majority of their stuff was kind of self-contained.
Sure.
Diving into Vertigo, we always give the new customers, the great stuff, Why the Last Man, Preacher, etc. But yeah, these days it's kind of weird. I still read Astro City religiously.
Me too, one of my favorite
Absolutely
series.
Love it. Whether it was, but you know, the thing is, if it wasn't published through the Vertigo imprint, I'd still be reading it.
Yeah,
it
of course. I'm actually
DC.
Very surprised that Image didn't take on Astro
City
because they did publish some of the.
They did for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, we didn't get to talk about the last issue of Astro City, which was written from the point of view of the cat or the dog.
Yeah.
Kurt Busiek's second. You wrote that old Superman issue that you wrote from the view of Crypto?
No, I don't remember it.
Lynn who I'm going to force to co-host a show with me in the future. She loves dog comics. You should read those. They're good.
Yeah, anything
Astro
with
City.
A corgi.
Everyone should just read Astro City. Yeah, he's reading it. All right, good, excellent. Cool, so those are the new DC number ones, so one Vertigo, one DC. We're going to move it to Marvel now. We've got a number one and a number zero, although really it's a number two number one, because this is the sequel to a miniseries from, I guess, five years ago. Called Spider-Men, and it was the basically the coming together of Peter Parker from the 616 universe with Miles Morales, the Spider-Man of the Ultimate Universe. At that point, they were two very separate universes and with multiple books being published from the Ultimate Universe at the time.
And then everything went...
Yeah. But it went in a very good way because Secret Wars was excellent. So now we get Spider-Man 2, number one, written again by Brian Michael Bendis, who wrote the first series. And drawn again
by Sarah Pacelli.
Yeah. God, it was fucking good to see her artwork.
Oh, man. Man. I mean, it kind of sucked having Sarah Pacelli leave the monthly Spider-Man title, but now we know why. And this is just great.
So do you keep up to date with Miles Morales' book? Because I loved when it first started in the Ultimate Universe. I loved that series so much, and I haven't stuck with it since he came over to the 616.
Not really,
because when they announced it, and this is like, you know, especially prevalent after just seeing Spider-Man Homecoming. Have you seen it?
Not yet.
It's good. It's very good. I really like it. It might be my favorite Marvel DC.
Yeah, everyone's telling me to go see it. It's just a matter
MCU
of
movie.
Time.
You know, you watch that and it's like teenage Spider-Man, being a teenager, going to school. And like, that's the Spider-Man. Those are the best Spider-Man stories. And the fact that they had this chance to bring Miles over, make him the main Spider-Man, make Peter Parker like semi-retire and just kind of go to kind of a support role.
I mean, they've almost kind of gone there. I mean, Peter's still kind of his mentor. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, he's also still Peter Parker's still the main Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I'm really disappointed that they didn't do more with bringing Miles over to 616.
I was kind of curious about this issue going in, just because of the whole who is the other Miles.
So yeah, that's right. The first Spider-Man book was about Peter Parker accidentally getting transported to Miles's
Ultimate Universe.
That's right. And they have an adventure together, and then he comes back and he Googles who Miles Morales is in the 616 universe, the regular Marvel universe, and it ends with him going, oh my God, looking at the screen.
Well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, if there's a Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe, there's got to be a Miles Morales in the 616 universe.
Exactly. And so that was the cliffhanger they ended on, like, you know, with Peter Parker being shocked as to who Miles was in this universe. Then for 5 years, we don't hear anything followed up on this.
Thank you, Bendis.
This is the thing that Bendis did quite a lot 5 years ago. I don't know if you read End of Days.
Yes.
Daredevil End of Days. That ended on a very bizarre note that, I mean, that was kind of alt reality, so I guess they can forgive.
They can kind of leave that up in the air forever.
Yeah. But I hated the ending of that, by the way.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2, I guess, would have made sense if they followed up on it 2 years ago, before Secret Wars happened and Miles has been brought over to this world anyway. But now, having this book exist with them having a reference Miles coming from an alternate reality
Miles in our 616 universe,
contradicts what happened in Secret Wars, kind of, right?
Sort of, yeah, yeah. I mean, not to say that Marvel doesn't contradict itself almost all the time, but I mean, I guess that's also part of the fun of this story. It just dives in. It says, you know, there's two Miles's, Miley. Yep.
Miley.
in the Marvel Universe now, one Spider-Man, who's the other guy? And you kind of get the reveal here a little bit, but not completely.
You don't get any reveal. The Miles Morales of this world is an older dude with a big scar down his face.
A lot of big scars.
And that's all we know so far.
And he has a prevalence for hoodies, apparently. But, you know, I loved the artwork. The storyline kind of jittered along for me, and then everything was cool, especially when the Taskmaster turned up.
Yeah, but is it the Taskmaster? Is this an
ultimate Taskmaster?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it could be.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's the thing. The thing with Bendis books is now, even in general, when Bendis books are bad, they're still infinitely readable.
Yeah, exactly.
I finished them. I'm like, fuck you, Bendis. Sometimes I didn't necessarily do it after reading this issue, but
no, with this one, I'm actually kind of looking forward to issue two.
Yeah, I'll look. No matter how bad this book gets, I'm still going to read all of it because I'm an idiot.
No, don't say that, man. Come on. Look, it's only going to be, what, 5 issues?
5 issues.
And, you know, then we'll only have to wait another 5 or 6 years for Spider-Man 3.
Miles Morales of the 616 universe is a Skrull. That's my prediction.
You're putting it out there, are you?
No.
Oh, come on.
And then we're going to do Secret Invasion again.
I'm just wondering if the Miles Morales of the 616 universe is one of Peter Parker's old foes.
Right. He kind of look, that Scarface, he could be Jigsaw.
it could be Taskmaster.
Right.
You know? Could be anybody. But,
yeah. Anyway, yeah, cool. All right, we'll continue spoiling this for you as the months continue. So another issue that Marvel put out this week was a zero issue to a comic that I've been enjoying quite a lot recently. Is the manga that Marvel are reproducing called Zombies Assemble. Which
How
is
good was this?
Yeah, written and drawn by Komiyama with some translations and scripts done by Jim Zub. So this is the bulk of this book... which has it actually finished already? Or
I think the original miniseries is finished,
but the fourth issue of this hasn't come out yet.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not sure. I don't think
we've reviewed 1, 2, and 3 on the show, and then I haven't read 4.
This zero issue is supposed to be set between the first miniseries and Zombies Assemble 2 miniseries.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, it's all about Tony Stark.
Yeah. I love this hilarious, heightened manga version of Tony Stark. I find this whole series so fun.
It is such an easy read and so much fun to get through. I haven't enjoyed a Marvel comic like this for a while.
And at first, I was like really enjoying having these bigger format manga, but now I actually really want a classic manga collection of all
kind of
them.
A digest.
Yeah. I hope they're going to release down the track.
Oh, I reckon they will. I mean... The whole story of the initial miniseries was basically a zombie outbreak in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's right.
Which is what this is based on. And this kind of this zero issue is almost a pause, I guess, between the miniseries and focuses very much on Tony and his decision to want to get rid of his Iron Man armors for Pepper Potts.
Yeah, he basically wants to stop. He wants to stop taking on all the challenges that come to destroy the Earth, so that he can settle down with Pepper Potts and not stop risking his own life for the rest of the world.
Yeah, he's more than happy for others to risk their lives instead. But I mean,
this is basically a retelling of what inspires him to create Ultron.
Basically, yeah. That's spot on. I mean, you could read this and then just go watch Avengers 2.
That's right. Which is it's weird that it says Zombies Assemble because there's nothing to do with zombies at all in this.
Unless there's a zombie brain in Ultron.
That could be great.
That could be
something. I would read the fuck out of that, and it looks like I'm going to because Zombies Assemble number 2 starts very soon.
Yeah, dude.
Hopefully we'll get
this.
The fourth issue of Zombies Assemble, but... Yeah, I just think these are so cool. If you like manga, if you like alternate retellings of,
well, even if you don't
Avengers
like manga,
stuff.
I mean, a lot of people just kind of give manga the kick because of the way it's published and the way you kind of have to change your reading style to get through it.
Siobhan famously hates manga. It's me who's the big manga head.
Yeah, totally you.
Or every week I'm just trying to get her to read more.
Oh, it's disgusting. But if you just want something fun to read, especially something where you don't need, the 50-odd years worth of backstory, just get into it. It's really, really good.
Yeah, and it does, I've often wondered why they don't do a book, a comic that directly relates to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I know they try and integrate little parts of it, and they do those shocking prelude comics before the movies, but this one absolutely just kind of builds on what we've seen in the movies.
Oh, Marvel kind of does that with the Marvel Universe Guardians of the Galaxy series.
Right.
It's not...
Which are for kids.
Yeah, they do target it towards kids. I read it, and I love it.
Cool.
I think it's hilarious. It's one of their best books, and it's also one of their most underrated books. It's set... pretty much in their, that Guardians of the Galaxy cinematic universe. And it's just a lot of fun.
Okay, I'll have to check it out.
It's just one of those one and done kind of read comics and put it away. It's great.
So let's move over to Image right now. And thank God you're here because... I like Matt Wagner. I've read Grendel.
I love Grendel.
Good.
Grendel's one
tell.
Of my favorites.
And I've read a bunch of his Batman stuff. I love... his Trinity book.
Yep.
It's one of my favorite Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman stories. But I've never read Mage. So this is a zero issue, which is the finale of a series that he's... Is it a finale?
This is the third miniseries, I guess, for the Mage trilogy. I can't even remember when Mage 2 finished. It was so long ago.
So this is the zero issue for Mage, The Hero Denied, and it's written and drawn by Matt Wagner. Can you please tell me about Mage, because I know nothing about him.
Look, Mage was just basically the story of Arthur Pendragon, kind of an updated version of King Arthur.
Right.
The guy's trying to be a superhero in a world where superheroes don't exist. Mm-hmm. He does have powers, although a lot of the time he just, you know, it's your usual invulnerability and super strength. He's not unkillable. And instead of, running around with a sword lobbed at him from, as they say in Monty Python, by a watery tart, Excalibur is a baseball bat.
Right.
So, looks like Matt's kind of come up to almost the 90s or, you know, the early 2000s here with the new series, which sees Kevin Matchstick, the main character, still walking around in his jeans and T-shirt kind of uniform, although he's lost a lot more on top than he used to.
Is that relatable at all?
Yeah, it is. Well, with me, it is. And he's still doing what he does best, which is basically track down creatures of myth and legend and keeping the world safe from them.
Right, and he also encounters another would-be superhero called the Steez.
The Steez.
Who is, yeah, like a 90s personified.
Well, look at his jacket. It even has kind of the Image logo sort of on his
jacket.
And
he even says what counts nowadays is image
and style.
I found it very on the nose, but it's funny, you know.
Yeah.
I
think it's also kind of Matt Wagner taking a bit of a pot shot at himself.
Great.
You know?
So, yeah, this is basically like a kind of, getting you up to speed on where Mage is at. In this world and time. It's 12 pages long. This is
short. It's not $1.99
issue.
But the series is going to be 15 issues long.
That starts this August.
Yeah, for those who do want to catch up, this was released last week alongside with a reprint of the entire first miniseries, Mage the Hero Discovered.
Should I read this, Jim?
Dude, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's a real good one?
Yeah. If you like Matt Wagner, I mean, especially if you liked his Grendel stuff, you're going to love Mage. Mage is fantastic.
Awesome. All right. I will check it out.
It's totally up there.
So that was the Image books for this week. Let's move it to Dynamite now. I've got two Dynamite books.
What have we got for Dynamite?
Well, the one I was actually quite excited to read is one that everyone listening is going to be like, why the hell were you excited to read this? It is Centipede number one.
The video game.
The second comic from Dynamite, which is based off an Atari franchise.
Atari classic.
Sword Quest. I've been loving. It's one of my biggest surprises of the year.
Far out.
And this one isn't far behind it. This is written by Max Bemis, who is the lead singer in a band called Say Anything or something. Say Anything.
Yep.
But I read he did a great comic last year or the year before called X-Men, The Worst X-Man Ever.
I remember
was
that, yeah.
Really, really fun. Mm-hmm. And this teams him up with artist. Do you want to give this one an attempt?
I'm going to say Aeon.
Aeon Marin.
Aeon Marin.
Whose art is phenomenal. How good is this big double page spread?
Oh, man, how great is that? And that's just kind of the beginning of the comic.
So, yeah, the first page is like, you know, basically this whole story is about the last guy on Earth it's not even Earth, sorry, it's a different planet. They've been able to access our Earth's
video games
and movies
and kind of bring them to
culture.
Life.
Is it bring them to life or is I think it's just to kind of read our legends and then...
I don't know. Something's happened with the Centipede game, especially, you know, that's brought destruction to this world.
Right. So he is the only person left on his planet because the Centipede has destroyed everyone on his planet.
Yeah.
And that is I don't know if you've ever played the classic arcade game Centipede, in which a centipede moves from one side of the screen to the other and you've got to shoot him.
Yeah, and there are mushrooms and spiders everywhere. Yeah. And yeah, it's a whole bunch of geeky fun. But it looks like the centipede has come to this Earth and pretty much destroyed everything in its path.
Except this one dude.
Except this one dude who is just what? I mean, he's a big, tough scientist guy.
He's quickly going crazy. He's created...
He may have already gone there.
He's created an invisible friend, which is like, you know, a kind of dumb trope to make him just be able to address us.
Yeah.
Narrate what he's doing
to us. Yeah, that kind of jarred me a little bit because from the first page, he's basically talking to you, the reader.
I get why they did that. It's silly, but it works. I think this is like, you know, the colours are phenomenal in this as well.
Oh, yeah, the colours are great.
And really competent, dynamic art, especially that. So, the big splash page straight away when you turn on page 2 and 3 is the reveal that Centipede can fly and you see this kind of like city left in ruins, and he's left all these buildings and things knocked over and roads, so it spells out game over.
Yeah, that's a bit weird, but yeah, it works.
I loved it. That was really, really cool. I think, yeah, this has a lot more style than a you know, an arcade game tie-in deserves, I think.
I think they've definitely kind of, I mean, the game is, especially, you know, when it was originally released, was very simple. As far as, yeah, like all the games all were like back games then. Are,
yeah.
As long, look, I like Dynamite doing these kind of Atari classics, as long as they don't do an adaptation of the E.T. game. You know, which was just...
I would like a comic about the making of the E.T. game.
I'm not sure I'd want to read that. It'd be depressing as hell.
That's the game that single-handedly killed the video game industry in like 1982.
Yeah, there's that, you know, legend of there being a huge landfill of E.T. cartridges somewhere in America.
How would a comic be where all of those games become sentient and then that's the bad guy in a big comic.
Okay, then I could probably read that, yeah.
So yeah, Centipede number one. I don't know if you have anything to for any love for that Centipede game, or
definitely, you know, even if you're just into old school games period.
Yeah check these out. I like these
Atari. Yeah, I liked it as well. It was good.
Did you read Soul Quest as well? That one's really good.
No, I haven't hit that yet.
It's much better than this, but I like
I remember story, yeah. I remember liking Sword Quest as a game as well, like more than I did Centipede.
Well, all so. The lore behind the game of Sword Quest, they actually, you know, created comics
around
it actually, and they're apparently there are original comics for Centipede back in the 80s as
well. Oh, wow.
yeah, I like all the background. All the back matter in these issues is really cool. So also from Dynamite this week, we had a book called Skin and Earth.
Yeah.
Which is written and drawn by an electronic artist called Lights. Story art and lettering by Lights.
Yeah, they're apparently an alt-pop phenomenon.
Yeah. I learned that in this book too. But this book, Skin and Earth, is a kind of, you know, dystopian future in which there has been like a chemical outbreak, and if you are contagious, you are like you have to stay in this area, and
you have to stay in a certain part of the city, and you're limited to where you can go and what you can do.
But the hero of this story was left a lot of money when her mother died, and so she uses that to study at the university in the untainted part of the earth, and also hooks up with someone who gives her a tattoo at some point.
Yeah. I mean, this was in kind of an interesting premise to begin with. It had kind of a bit of a Logan's Run feel to it, and I liked it until, I guess, I don't know, I guess until she found this with the guy you were talking about, you know, her love interest, Priest, and then it kind of got away from me.
Yeah, they did a lot of world building, and then it kind of took a sidestep to her to kind of it got quite angsty. Basically.
Yeah, and you know, it very much became almost an issue about two teenagers against against the system.
It felt like Avatar or Pocahontas.
Pocahontas in space.
I'm not sure if I'm gonna keep paying attention in this book, but yeah, if that sounded appealing,
I didn't
to you,
mind it. The art
bad.
Was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And the coloring was pretty good, but yeah, I'm not sure I'm gonna hit the second issue.
So that is Skin and Earth issue one. This was a great break in programming, and it always is whenever a new Sergio Aragonés book comes out.
Dude.
Jim learnt the struggle this week of just getting through all the number ones, because there are some that, you know, it's pretty easy to choose the ongoings that we read each week. And it never becomes that much of a slog, but the hardest part of getting through the 50 books that we read each week are the bottom of the barrel number one issues.
Okay, the easiest part of me reading all the number ones for this week is the next book.
Yeah, so Gru is Sergio Aragonés's character who just loves battling, and every single person on the face of the earth hates him.
I've been reading Gru for 25 years. I love this book. I love Sergio Aragonés, and despite the fact that even they say it, even Sergio and Mark Evanier, who writes it all, have said, you know, this is basically a one joke book that he's been going for two decades.
Yeah, if you have read one issue of Gru, in theory, you don't need to read anymore.
But you should.
And I would say the same about another great book that I know we both love called Usagi Yojimbo.
Yes.
Like, which just kind of, you know, it repeats the same formula with slight variations on it. And if you love it, you fucking love it. If you don't, it's not for you.
But again, Gru is not the hardest book to get into.
No, God, it's so easy.
It's Conan with even less intelligence.
Like if Chris Farley was Conan.
I like that, yeah. But it's... I mean, Gru has just it's just phenomenal the way it's written and the way it kind of reflects, you know, modern society as well. There's a lot of stuff in here that you'll sit and read and say, yeah, this is going on right now. You know,
yeah, totally.
Especially with politics and religion.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, and this is what the last, what was the last one called? Like Flay of the Gods?
Fray of the Gods.
Yeah. This is called Play of the Gods, issue number one. It's pretty much exactly the same premise. Gru and his loyal dog Roberto make their way to a town, which begins by saying, "I'm so glad that Gru isn't here." And then Gru shows up, and they're like, "Oh no!"
And then the town pretty much disappears.
Yeah, and then it plays into kind of like gods and religion and the way people dictate the way religion.
The way religion sometimes spreads and the way it sometimes forces itself onto different societies.
And the things that people do in the name of gods, and then you have gods going, "I don't want them to do that." So,
well, that was the cool thing about this, the fact that it cut to the afterlife, or, you know, to the place where the gods live, their pantheon.
The heavens.
And you see the gods bickering amongst themselves, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. And Sergio Aragonés is a master cartoonist.
Oh, absolutely.
Like one of the absolute best. And you've definitely seen him stuff if you've ever picked up a Mad magazine. He's such a great cartoonist, and this is just him just doing... You can tell he loves this so much. His panel work's so intricate. There's so many background
jokes.
He's
one of those few artists, I think, that could do a wordless book and still make it, you know, have it make perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know, one of those artists that he's just been at this for so long. He's just one of the best in the industry.
Same as, I'll go into depth further when we do our graphic novel wrap up at the end of the month. But I picked up last week another book that came out through Dark Horse, which is called, was it Lead Pencil Poisoning by,
Jeff Darrow.
The Jeff Darrow lead pencil art. And there's another book, another artist who, you know, his background work is just, you know, second to none alongside Aragonés and, like, those greats, but just such intricate jokes everywhere and grotesque bullshit. And
Jeff Darrow's, I mean, he's Shaolin Cowboy stuff. He's a big guy in Rusty the Boy Robot. And he did all the, you know, the design work for the Matrix films and stuff like that. He's just indecently talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dark Horse has a lot of those guys on lock, including Sergio Aragonés. Pick up Gru if you haven't read a Gru. This is a great one to start
with.
Yeah,
this is a really good place to kick off.
From Oni Press this week, we saw the return of one of my favorite series, Kaiju Max.
Yay!
Written and drawn by Xander Cannon. This is the first issue of Season 3. If you've not read an issue of Kaiju Max, what are you doing?
Get onto this series.
It is a kaiju book, so, like, you know, your Godzillas and your various megafauna.
Orange is the new kaiju.
except, yeah, it's them in a super prison.
Yeah, and I particularly liked this one because it kind of started off with one of the guys, one of the prison guards,
wardens,
or one of the wardens, an Australian.
Yeah, that's right.
Warden.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of crikey and corky, you know, how you doing's in this. It was really, really great.
Yeah, this is it's such a great book. Xander Cannon's style is amazing, very unique.
The art itself is simple, but at the same time, there's depth to it and
very expressive.
When you
monsters.
Can bring to life, you know, a mountain.
Yeah, that's right.
You're doing something right.
So yeah, that's the latest character that joins the prison is a mountain who can kind of influence people's actions.
Yeah, basically a sentient mountain or a volcano even. And the fact that, you know, it's got a face.
Yeah, a very angry face.
Very, very angry face. But if you can bring a character like that to life, I loved this.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you have the politics that are present in a prison drama. You have a lot of clique stuff. There was, like, you know, the first season even did like a prison rape scene.
Yes.
but and I know that sounds really heavy handed, but it actually is dealt with like quite a large amount of emotional weight. It isn't like, you know, isn't jokey.
Well, that's the thing. I think he handles that sort of thing really delicately.
Yeah.
It's not forced, and it's not done for shock value.
Yeah.
It progresses the story. And when you've got these amazing, you know, gigantic monsters who are fighting amongst themselves for a better position in the Kaiju Max, it just becomes this really kind of awesome, what am I looking for?
Epic?
Sort of, almost, I guess, I don't know, it's hitting.
I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's fun. It's heaps fun.
The next issue has a bunch of ginormous gang tattooed bunny rabbits.
They're like Usagi's kind of like, you know, bad versions. One's carrying what looks like a huge rifle. But yeah, no, this is definitely a series that I'm just going to keep going with until it stops. It's fantastic.
And there's excellent back matter as well. You get like a review of a kaiju movie and then a really cool kind of explanation of Xander Cannon's kind of take on freelancing and why you should do the jobs that aren't necessarily great for your career, that you can do your career-based jobs then, as well as...
I love books that still have... The mail,
yeah,
kind of, you know, letters in the back. I still think that's a necessary part of comics.
They're the only single issues that I keep now.
Oh, really?
You got to have good back matter and a letter column. Otherwise, I don't keep singles. So, surprise of the week came from Aspen Comics.
Yeah, man.
What's going on here? The second volume of a book called Lola XOXO, which is written and drawn and created by someone called Sia Oom. And I looked on her...
lettering by Zen.
I looked on her her Twitter profile, and she is doing a Batman Beyond issue very soon.
Bring it on.
Which focuses on that version of Batgirl.
If it's anything, if the artwork in that is anything like it is in here, the art for this issue was outstandingly good.
The pencils in particular. And
absolutely.
And the colouring. Yeah, it's all really great. But yeah. there's some pencils on their own at the end of this book, which are excellent.
This really, really came together. I had no idea about this book whatsoever. I don't go out of my way to read Aspen Comics. But I gave this a go and I loved it.
Yeah. Because this is the second volume. There are a lot of... It doesn't do that good of a job of kind of catching you up on who the characters are and what they're doing.
It kind of assumes you've already read the first series.
And there are multiple references to saying, it's like Asterix, C, Lola, XOXO, Volume 1. But yeah. I think I probably won't stick with this series, but I will absolutely...
I don't know, man. I think I'm curious enough to hit issue 2.
Yeah, well, if I was to stick with it, I might go back and try and read the first volume. But Sia Oom, whatever her name is someone that's on my radar now. I think she's
absolutely
excellent artist.
If she gets snatched up by DC or Marvel, best thing. Because her artwork is just a feast for the eyes. I love it.
Is Lola, like, she's like a bounty hunter or something?
It seems like it.
She has a team, and then there's various groups that are out to kill her.
Yeah, yeah. And
classic comic book stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's a trail.
It's almost kind of mixing an old Western theme with... Because, I mean, the bad guys in it are pretty modern looking.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an espionage Western or something.
Yeah, kind of like that. I like that description. Nice.
IDW this week put out the first issue of Dread Gods, which is written by Ron Mars, with art by Tom Rainey.
Is this a new imprint called Ominous, I think? Ominous Press?
All right, Ominous Press through... Yeah, Ominous Press
through IDW.
So this is a book in a world where you can plug your head into this big dome and get the latest adventures or streams from the gods.
Yeah, well, the classic kind of 12 gods of Olympus.
Yeah, Zeus and Hades but it's like almost like wrestling.
Oh, all right, okay, now you got my attention.
So yeah, like it opens with a bunch of townspeople like pushing their way forward to get these plugs that they can plug into themselves.
Yeah, it looks like there's only a certain amount of them available, and people fight over them.
And then the bulk of this issue is a clash between a Hydra. It was fun to see a character in a book yell out Hydra and it not being
Marvel.
That's right. it's an actual Hydra. You know, a multi-headed beast.
And I think who is it? Tom Rainey on pencils.
Yes.
It is. And Tom Rainey's actually kind of doing... I mean, I've liked Tom Rainey's stuff since his days at Image. But especially, you know, with the reveal of the Hydra itself, some of the art's just wow.
Yeah, real good stuff.
Yeah.
So Zeus starts taking on this Hades and then realizes there are too many heads. So he says, come to me, my godlings. And then
be my G-Man.
Yeah. Ares, Tai Chi, Achilles, Hera, Apollo, and Artemis show up and they all take on.
And basically, like you said, there's a big wrestling smackdown.
Yep. And then Hades shows up. And then it's the end of the issue. And
Hades just looks like the Rock in a helmet.
And then we see that our guy who plugged in at the beginning say, it's not over, it's just the beginning.
Yes. So
this is going to be continued.
It's interesting because, I mean, this is, for those of you who are reading kind of Marvel and...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Image Comics in the 90s, it's got that Bart Sears feel to it, you know, big muscle people and nice pencils and lines. But
muscle people.
Yeah, big, huge, we're talking over-the-top muscled people here. But it's also got a fair amount of, it's emotive because some of the facial expressions in this are just really, really cool.
Yeah, this is a fun little issue. And then the second part of the issue, I didn't bother reading. Giant killers.
Yeah, I kind of...
Which is written in art by Bart Sears.
That's so Bart Sears, yeah. Who looks like he's making a comeback somehow, I guess through IDW. I got through about 4 pages and went, nah.
Yeah, I'm the same. And this is going to... I don't know why this is in here, but there's a book called Giant Killers, which is probably going to be on the same imprint, which is
well,
start
there's
soon
an
too.
Ad back here as well for, you know, I mean, this whole new Ominous Press universe. It looks like they're going to have a fair few titles.
Right. Don't tell me Ominous Press put out. Oh, no, that was someone different. There's an ad for Diablo House.
No, it wasn't that. But it looks like we can expect titles like Infinity or what is it?
Legendary.
Ominous Press Legendary.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll keep up to date with those. You can tag in if you want.
Yeah.
Also from Keenspot this week, we had a book called Immortal, written by Rob Potchak with art by Owen Gianni, two creators that I've never heard of before.
Wasn't this the artist for Old Rat Queens?
Oh, really?
I think, maybe.
Oh, so this is like the bad bloke.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I think it might be. We'll have to look that one up. But Immortal was kind of like... I don't know. How would you describe this?
Okay, here's how I describe it. I'm a big fan of trying not to be negative of a book that isn't necessarily for me. This is the new artist from Ratkin.
Oh, from
the old ones.
Yeah,
okay,
so
he's
sweet.
Not the bad book. But I'm a massive fan of Old Guard right now, which is about a bunch of immortal warriors, contemplating what it's like to be alive forever and not be able to die. And it's handled with nuance. It's the characters are really, really easy to relate to, even though they're these, you know, centuries old warriors. It's an excellent, excellent book by Greg Rucka and
Leandro. And this is maybe not so.
This is the least subtle version of Old Guard.
Okay, one of the characters during a fight... starts quoting Metallica.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, and then, I'm not going to say anything. I'm a Metallica fan, but it's not something that pops up usually in the middle of a fight with a giant overgrown... I don't even know what that thing is.
And then he says to the female immortal, I might not have gotten to see you walk away about her butt. And so she slaps him.
He's like, worth it.
And then there's the guy's been turned into a monster...
It's almost like their version of Hulk, really, because yeah. I mean, he kind of, yeah, you see him turn it back into a human again. But yeah it's
if you wanted a Kevin Smith esque Immortals comic, Immortal
That's
might
perfect.
Be one for you. finally, and you may have read one or two more that I didn't.
Well, you want to do this?
Yeah.
Let's hit Red 5 Comics first.
Okay, Red 5 Comics. What do they put out?
Not much that I'm aware of.
TNA comics, right?
No, not really. Right. I mean, Red 5 have been kind of one of those steady smaller publishers that we do, you know, get their stuff in. It's just not up there with, say, you know, the likes of Boom Studios or Dynamite or whatnot. But this new series, a four-issue miniseries called After Eden, which is written by Scott Chitwood and with art by Rod Thornton, it kind of drew my interest.
Yeah, it was interesting enough. It's basically like it's what exactly what happens after the classic Bible story, in which Adam and Eve, the first two people who were created by God, get tempted by the devil, and they eat an apple, and then they get banished from the Garden of Eden.
This is basically the day after being kicked out of Eden.
That's right. And so you have some angels that have to look over them in a way, and then some of Satan's crew who are trying to make their lives as difficult as possible. And
these angels kind of turn into different animals so they won't be spotted by Adam and Eve. But yeah, it was a kind of cool story. I liked it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's one necessarily for me. I probably won't stick with it, but it was interesting enough.
Look, the subject matter kind of it interests me, and it's also a part of, I guess, that whole biblical story that isn't retold often. What happened, you know, especially the day after, or the weeks after Adam and Eve were kicked out. But the artwork itself is nice. It's very loosely penciled, though.
Yeah.
You know, there's little panels in here where Adam kind of, I don't know what that's a very, what's his name from Big Trouble in Little China kind of look, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
You know, Kurt Russell as Adam. I can see that.
Yeah, there's some of the cross hatching in this isn't so much cross hatching as it is just kind of scribbling over.
Yeah,
the top
almost
of
fill in.
Yeah,
yeah.
But no, there are some nice.
But if you're up, you know, if you're looking for a kind of a new take on one of the oldest stories there is, pick it up.
Check it out. So you read two books that I didn't. I don't know how I missed these.
Read two books. Okay.
I'm going to blame Scott for not putting these in my pile.
Another one through IDW Publishing, their Winona Earp series has just gotten a new miniseries.
I've not read any of this or watched any of this.
Me either. So that's probably why it was really difficult for me to get through just three or four pages of this.
The artwork looks pretty all right.
The artwork's nice. It's got, I assume this has kind of got a lot to do with the TV show itself, because there are characters in here. I have no idea who they are. It's building up to something. Maybe, I think this may be, it looks like a prequel to the TV series itself. And while it looks really great, and the art and colouring's really nice, I guess, you know, I've not watched any of it, I've not read any of it. Didn't grab me at all.
So no. Definitely one for, the, oh, wait, for wait, those wait, of you who already watched the show.
Yeah, just to put it in there, it's not for me.
Ah, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
And then finally from Boom, War for the Planet of the Apes.
This is possibly my favourite read of this week.
It was written by David F. Walker. Why the fuck didn't I read this?
I have been a huge fan of the Planet of the Apes reboots. I love the movies. And this is a prequel to the third film, which is about to be released. And it is good. It's got that, like the films, it's got kind of that Last of Us feel to it. And this is basically, I think it's going to go directly into the first scene of the third film. You get reintroduced to characters like Caesar and whatnot, and some of the new human characters in it as well, and what they've been up to since the second film. And it's great. It's really, really well written. It's really well done. And I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, there's a couple of Americanisms in this that were lost on me.
Right.
But at the same time, you know what? Monkeys versus humans, guns.
Which side do you pick?
I want to pick the monkeys, but at the same time, you also kind of get an introduction to
Woody Harrelson's
character in this as well. And yeah, this, if you're a fan of the films, pick this up, because what happens in this four-issue miniseries is going to be pretty important.
Yeah, written by David F. Walker with art by Jonas Scharf and colors by Jason Wardy.
Excellent.
Great books. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining me for this edition of First Things First.
You're more than welcome, man.
And your prize is that you get to roll the dice for DC Marvel Image. You know, so you're going to go back to your work. I'm going to spend the next hour talking to myself because I couldn't find anyone else that wanted to read all the comics that I read each week.
Yeah, that's an impossible. Look at that.
So yeah, every week to decide whether we review Image, DC, or Marvel, we roll a dice, which is what Jim is going to do right now. So it's 1 to 2, we review Image first, 3 to 4, Marvel, and 5 to 6, DC. First roll, it's spinning.
Spinning.
This is not how you do it. It takes too long.
No.
It's a 4. Marvel first. Image, and then DC. Thank you so much, Jim. Jim, if anyone listening wants to come and find you, just come to King's Comics, 310 Pitt Street. See the work of Jim on all of the shelves, because he orders all the books in.
Again, it's all my fault.
And if you can't find anything, just bang on that back office door, demand Jim answers your every single complaint, right? That's what you like, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be up for it while I'm ignoring it.
And you are on social media. You want to tag your Instagram account where you post many.
What the hell is an Instagram?
You don't have Instagram?
No, I've got a Facebook page.
That's your personal. Just find him on King's.
Just find me on King's. Go to
King's
there.
Comics Instagram. He's there. He shows up in the when you guys recreate the covers. I love seeing your head in those.
Yeah, no, apparently they're pretty popular. But yeah, if you need me, that's where I am.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jim. Look forward to yelling questions at you in future episodes.
Cheers.
All right, strap yourselves in, everyone. It's just me from now on. Your good friend Levin's just fucking talking to himself in the King's Comics back office for the next half hour to an hour, reviewing all of the new Marvel books, DC books, Image books, and other publishers. Let's kick things off with Marvel. Again, thanks to our guest host, Jim, a.k.a. Jim Bone, for doing such a great job. Let's kick things off for Marvel with The Defenders, issue number 3 by Brian Michael Bendis, David Marquez, and colors by Justin Ponsor. It's kind of fun reviewing this book without Siobhan, because I know she doesn't like it, and I'm okay with it. This is a new dawn of the age of bearable Bendis. This is the book, of course, featuring Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist. And it features the return of a trope that Bendis used to do a lot back in the comics that made me really like him. He used to do it a lot in his Daredevil run, in Powers as well, where you just have the talking heads all kind of adding different parts, like basically just various different characters offering little parts of the story. And so in this one, we kind of see like the backstory between the backstory of what happened between Luke Cage and Diamondback, and where Diamondback has been, and why, like, how crazy is he's come back. But it's told by just different people in New York, some of which are characters in this book, others of whom are like deli owners and nightclub goers and nuns. It's classic Bendis shit, and it's the classic Bendis shit that made me really like him to begin with. So I thought that was really, really cool. And this book is, you know, I mean, as a story, it's fine. Classic Siobhan quote there for you. I miss her very much. I know it's fun. It's fine and fun. It's foon. And I look forward to issue number 4. The big event going on in Marvel right now is Secret Empire. So here are some Secret Empire tie-in reviews for you, beginning with Secret Warriors issue number 4, written by Matt Rosenberg, with art by Javier Garon, and colors by Israel Silva. I love this book. Maybe it's because of the incredible Trad Moore covers, which I hope just kind of continues for the entire extent of this run. I also hope this book just continues post Secret Empire, because I think the group, which is Quake, Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, Ms. Marvel, Inferno, Karnak, and this new guy Leah, is a really cool team. And I think having like Karnak and Ms. Marvel and Moon Girl on the same team, they're all very drastically different characters, having them all on the same team is really fun. And every issue has been very fun until this one, where it gets quite dark, but I think it handles the balance of the light and the dark parts of all the characters really, really well. And it ends on a cliffhanger where someone dies. Obviously, they're not fucking dead, but that's how comics work, everybody. They're dead for now. I also really enjoyed Deadpool issue number 33 by Jerry Duggan, with Matteo Lolli and Mike Hawthorne on pencils, with inks by a bunch of other people and colors by somebody else. But this is the one probably has my favorite cover of the week, which has Deadpool at a principal's office that his daughter is sitting out the front of. And because this is set in the Secret Empire time, it's a Hydra-owned school. And so there is a big sign up that says, "Miss one detention, two more will take its place." That is a good joke, ladies and gentlemen. Comics should make more jokes like that. This just kind of sets up Deadpool's kind of space, like, you know, his headspace in Secret Empire. For a tie-in book, this is way better than it, you know, should be. It's the emotion behind this very jokey character and how he fits in this current world that he kind of thought he was on the right side of because Captain America told him to go and kill Coulson last issue. And now he's realizing that Hydra is no good, everyone. And I guess we're going to find out what Deadpool's long play is here in the next issue. I'm really enjoying Deadpool, and I'm definitely going to go back and read the entire run. So, you know what? People talk shit on tying in comics to events, but in this case, it's made me want to go and read all the stuff that came before it. So, I guess that's good. Uncanny Avengers this week, issue number 25, written by Jim Zub, with a bunch of different artists. This is a bit of a mess, this book. The story was all right. The art by Kim Jacinto, Janoy Lindsay, and Juanan Ramirez is capable when one of them does it and less capable when another one does it and fine when the other one does it. I don't know who any of the artists are and they'd make no way of saying which artist is which. So it's kind of like a very interchanging kind of art book, which I don't normally like. This is for whatever reason, it's a $4.99 book. It's like slightly bigger than your average issue. It's a very slow story in which not much happens. It's a classic tie-in book where a bunch of heroes solve a pretty low-level problem. It's all about Rogue defeating a monster and Dr. Voodoo's been possessed by something and they band together and they solve the problem and it's all wrapped up really neatly and I don't think this is worth $4.99 and it's a classic example of Marvel being dickheads. Marvel are not dickheads though whenever they put out a new issue of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl by Ryan North and Erica Henderson and Rico Renzi. This is, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know that I fucking love this book. And this one sends Nancy and Squirrel Girl to the Savage Land, which is a part of the Marvel Universe that I love very deeply when it's handled the right way. Essentially, it is an island filled with dinosaurs. And there's some great travel jokes here when Squirrel Girl and Nancy realize they win a competition basically to go to the Savage Land. Nancy had no idea that dinosaurs roamed the Earth, and so there's her being so excited that there are dinosaurs in her universe, which is very cool. And because they won the competition, they can't just teleport there, so they have to go on a really long flight. And if you read this book, you know that there's some hilarious kind of like meta commentary on what you're reading at the bottom of each page by Ryan North, who writes the book. And at one point, like when they take the flight from New York to Savage Land, they kind of say that, you know, this part of the trip takes forever with all the flying and transfers and connecting flights. To fully emulate the airplane experience, please do nothing but stare at this panel for at least 19 hours. So, you know, where I was just complaining about Uncanny Avengers 25 being not worth $4.99 because it took me like 3 minutes to read a $5 book, this $4 book took me 19 hours, 20 minutes to read. And that's good value for money. I love this book so much. I hope it never ends. It's my favorite creative team and my favorite Marvel book, I think. I'm going to change my mind probably by the end of this segment. Edge of Venomverse number 2 is a continuation of this kind of build up to this big Venom event that's happening in the Venom books and the Spidey books, kind of like a take on the Spider-Verse books eventually. But these kind of prelude books kind of take famous, or in this case not so famous, Marvel characters and bond them with Venom for a one and done kind of story that I think we're going to see these characters kind of be a part of the bigger event when it happens. The first book was all about X-23 and was written by Matt Rosenberg. I really, really loved it. On the front cover, it says that this issue is by Rosenberg too, so I got excited, but it's actually written by Christopher Hastings because this is a Gwenpool book. Where the X-23 Venomverse book was quite, like, it was dark and but it's still fun because, you know, Laura is a much darker character than Gwenpool, which is a even more meta version of Deadpool because she is someone from our world who has kind of been transported into the Marvel universe and is very aware that she's in a comic book. So it's that, but she has the symbiote attached to her. And this just kind of, like, you know, I mean, if you were already a fan of the Gwenpool character, this is fine, but this has just annoyed me, and I hope that she doesn't play a big part in the Venomverse event. The character's just not for me, or not at all. Black Panther and the Crew this week, issue number 4 by Ta-Nehisi Coates. And who else writes this one? Yona Harvey with pencils by Butch Geiss. This book is all about the coming together of Black Panther, Misty Knight, Storm, Luke Cage, and Manifold. However, they're kind of really taking their time with introducing getting all the members of the crew together. and it's kind of the anchors are A Misty Night and Storm, which I really like. But we only kind of get little glimpses of Luke Cage and Black Panther in this issue. Manifold hasn't shown up yet. Apparently, that's what issue 5 is all about. The bulk of this story now is kind of about the backstory about this this character who in this kind of is he Queens, a New York kind of infamous kind of guy who has a long backstory in which he dabbled with dark arts and magic and superpowers. Ezra is his name. This is a cool story, and I'm really looking forward to reading the full thing. But I kind of feel like I kind of wish that Marvel had just made this a graphic novel. I think it would have been a much better read if it all just came out at once. So there's that. I don't know. I still enjoy it though. Just wish I was reading it all in one hit. Issue number 8 of Hulk this week by Mariko Tamaki with art by Jorge Duarte, colors by Matt Miller. Finally, we see Jennifer Walters hulking out a bunch. But unfortunately, it's tied into this like really goofy. I mean, I guess it's kind of fun, but it's quite stark in that the first, you know, 6 issues of this run was not fun at all. And then we just get this very, very like silly kind of reality TV show in which it's like a cooking show. And the guy who films the cooking show slips the host of the cooking show like some monster juice. And then he turns into like a Hulk-esque monster. And I think that I'm happy to see this a bit lighter, but I think it's too light for the vibe they were going for in the start of this run. So, I don't know, maybe that's my fault for complaining that it was too dark, but, I'm still going to be on board because the cover of the next issue is a really great cover featuring, She-Hulk and Hellcat. And I like that pairing and I'll keep reading that. One of the most underrated books that Marvel are putting out right now is Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme, written by Robbie Thompson, it's usually art by Javier Rodriguez, and I was bummed to see that it was a new artist taking over because I love Javier Rodriguez, but this is a very good artist called Nathan Stockman taking over, so it was fine. I was in good hands. Colors on this one by Tamara Bonvillain, so you know that shit is going to be fucking great. Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme is like basically about Doctor Strange being like the least powerful of all the magicians in this like kind of a Sorcerer Supreme, like a kind of a team of sorcerers from different timelines and realities kind of banding together to like they battle Isaac Newton in the first few issues. But now we basically kind of see more on this future version of Wiccan his version of the X-Men. It's a really, really cool, almost a one-shot, and then it sends them even further into the future where there is a return character that we've not seen in Marvel books for quite a while, and their surprise is really, really good. This is just a super fun book, and it's one of those books that I'm very surprised is still going because I don't know the readership of it, and it's very, a lot of the characters aren't very prominent characters. Like, you know, when Doctor Strange is like kind of like the biggest character on the team, you know that... You know, it doesn't have a massive appeal to a broader range of readers. But this is a really, really cool book. If you haven't checked it out, I'm sure the first trade is out there. There's a Choose Your Own Adventure issue. I highly recommend this run. It's really fun. Over to X-Men books right now. Jean Grey, issue number 4. I think this is easily the best X-Men book coming out right now. Even though I did not like that first issue, it's gotten better and better since. I like 2 and 3 more than this one. But basically, each issue is Jean Grey kind of going to a different corner of the Marvel Universe and having an adventure with a character. And this one is her battling alongside the unworthy Thor. So Odin's son, she finds him drinking his sorrows away in a bar as a bunch of frost giants orcs are kind of banding together to destroy him, and she basically wants him to teach her how to be a warrior, and it's a kind of fun adventure featuring this funny, silly, drunk version of the unworthy Thor, written by Dennis Hopeless, art by Harvey Tolabow. I like this series a lot, and it looks like the next issue is going to be a team up with Psylocke, so we're going back to the X-Men world then, which is good. I think Dennis Hopeless has a good grasp of X-Men stuff, and I like him. He's a great writer. Generation X, issue number 4, written by Christina Strain, with art by regular artist Amilcar Pina, who like I'm a fan of because it's just the art is just so weird. But then suddenly halfway through the book, the art switches over to one of our favorite artists from the last year, Martin Marazzo, who does a bunch of stuff with David F. Walker. He did a few fill-in issues of Nighthawk, and he also did that really great art book with on IDW about the crimes in art. I can't remember what it was called, but I loved his art in that. But when he shows up, it's suddenly like, oh, I like this art way more. I wish he was on the book. Anyway, this issue was fine with great art from Martin Marazzo. I'm kind of glad I'm not reading any other X-Men books, though, because it seems kind of stale, and the idea of the X-Men books tying into Secret Empire just sounded like double boring this week. Over to Star Wars right now, and we get the 9th issue of Dr. Aphra by Kieran Gillen. And Kev Walker, you may remember me complaining about how much I hated the Screaming Citadel, which was the tie-in event between the Star Wars book and Dr. Aphra that has been happening the last month or two. Thank goodness that's over, and we don't have a super photo referencey artist doing Dr. Aphra and her companions. Instead, we get the return of Kevin Walker, who is an awesome, awesome cartoonist. And all these Star Wars books should be drawn in this kind of more classic cartooning style. No more photo referencey bullshit. It doesn't work. It looks gross. It looks scary. This story follows on from Screaming Citadel. It's not quite as good as it was when this series started, which was only, like 9 issues ago. But it's still fun. I just burped. Normally, if Siobhan was here, I would not burp and let her talk, and then I would do a secret burp while she was talking. But she's not here, and these are the things that happen. Anyway, it looks like Darth Vader is going to be part of this book again, which is cool. All right, over to DC now for issue number 26 of Wonder Woman. This is the start of a new arc with a new creative team after Greg Rucka and a plethora of amazing artists just finished up their run with issue 25. This is the beginning of a new one. It's called Heart of the Amazon. And the creative team, we have writer Shea Fontana, Mirka Andolfo on art with colors by Romulo Fiardo Jr. And I thought this was a nice extension of what we saw in the Rucka run. I don't think it's a drastic kind of story turn, but in terms of tone, it's actually a lot more in line with what we saw in the Wonder Woman movie, while not being like that gross synergy kind of vibe. It kind of mixes what I liked about Greg Rucka's run with what I like about the super hopeful version of Wonder Woman that we saw in the recent movie. We see this kind of story that is quite removed from the action that you would associate with a Wonder Woman book. Then we see a big time cliffhanger happen on the final page. I don't really want to go into it, the story, too much until I've read more of where they're going in this arc, because they introduce a bunch of stuff in this and then there's a big cliffhanger. So I don't really want to spoil what happens, but I think hopefully when Siobhan's back, there'll be more issues of this out and we could talk about it in depth, but rest assured, I think that Wonder Woman is in great hands, following Greg Rucka's departure. Over to Batman now. The First Ally, is the, final arc that Scott Snyder is writing for his All-Star Batman series with art by Rafael Albuquerque. And then there's a backup written by Rafael Albuquerque at the back. This is a classic case of Snyder introducing way too much bullshit in one issue. It kind of is a fun story that ties into Alfred's kind of rewritten origins, where he was a punk kid before becoming a butler, and that those parts of it are really great. But the current parts, which involve like Hush and everyone thinking that Bruce Wayne is Hush, and then everyone thinking that Batman is dressed up as Bruce Wayne instead of going, "Hey, Batman is Bruce Wayne," I thought it was a bit of a stretch. In any case, it's still an immensely readable comic, like everything Scott Snyder writes. So if you're enjoying it, you probably are. Batman Detective Comics issue 960 this week is written by James Tynion IV with really, really wonderful art by Alvaro Martinez and inks by Raul Fernandez, colors by Brad Anderson. You've got Batman hanging out with Zatanna as they kind of go through their backstories, and she teaches Bruce more about magic. And while that's going on, you have a big Azrael plot as the kind of dark church that that gave him his spooky Azrael powers are kind of causing havoc in Gotham. And you see Batwing and Batwoman having to team up to deal with this kind of fun mix of mystical arts and technology. It's really fun. I just love that this is a superb run. I think one of the great runs from Rebirth that just really does whatever the fuck it wants and does a great job of doing it. Detective Comics doing great stuff. Action Comics, issue number 983, written by Dan Juergens with art by Victor Bondanovich, who I loved over on New Superman, but Billy Tan is doing that now. You know what, man? I think action at the moment I am enjoying more than the regular Superman run that Gleason and fucking old mate, what's his name, are doing. Yeah, Action Comics is this. What they're doing is there's a massive team up of some of Superman's greatest foes. You've got Mongol, Zod, Cyborg, Superman, Eradicator, Metallo, and Blank. And then Superman's been blinded, but luckily a bunch of his friends have come running to his aid. You've got Supergirl, you've got Lex Luthor, you've got Superwoman, you've got Steel, and most excitingly, you have, is it Kenan Kong, the Chinese new Superman, come to help him out. And so there's this really fun battle when they all kind of each try and take on each other. And it ends with them all being shot into the Phantom Zone. And it looks like it's up to Lois and John Kent to save the day. It's really, really fun. It's nonstop. It lives up to its name. It's a comic that's full of action. What else could you expect from an Action Comics? Thank you very much, everybody. I'm at LevDog on Twitter. New Superman, issue number 13, Shanghai Under Siege, part 1. I love this book, written by Jean Luen Yang with art by Billy Tan. As it's continued on, and I love that this book is allowed to have gone for 13 issues. I feel like you would have gotten like four over it if this is a Marvel book. But we're seeing more and more characters, the kind of analogies of American DC characters. And so we see one of the Chinese Batman's foes returns in the form of a kind of character like Bane. He even has like venom being pumped into him. So I really enjoyed that. And it looks like they're really building towards something really fun and epic as the new Superman kind of takes on the responsibilities in the way that he should and starts leading the Justice League of China. It's fun. This is a really great book. Pick this one up for sure. Suicide Squad by Rob Williams and art by Gus Vasquez. I definitely fucked his name up. Sorry, Gus. This is basically the squad out on their first mission with Harley as the new leader of the Suicide Squad. And shit's fucking up everywhere. You see the Enchantress kind of show the full extent of her powers. Meanwhile, Amanda Waller has been taken to trial. There's a whole bunch of crazy shit going on. I don't know. I read this like 5 days ago. I can't remember what happened. But I'm sure it's cool. It was cool. We see the next kind of big threat to everyone. And it looks like all of the Suicide Squad are going to explode. So that might happen. Issue number 24 of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps by Robert Venditti with Ethan Van Sciver. This is another issue of this book that heaps of lantern stuff happens in. And it's fine. Oh, man, this is getting exhausting. Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 12, written by Scott Lobdell with art by Dexter Soy. Now, this is a book that every time I review it, I'm like, this book's really good. How come it's this good? This is the team up of Bizarro with Artemis and Jason Todd as Red Hood. This one deals with basically, I mean, look, the front cover is Bizarro's logo, which is the backwards Superman logo with blood dripping off it. And I'm going to tell you that the character potentially dies in this issue, so you can make of that what you will. But there's a level of pathos and kind of just like it's not heavy-handed at all, this death. It's the emotional level is quite sweet. It's not something that I ever kind of expected Scott Lobdell is a writer to ever do. So I think he's really surprising on this book, old Scotty. I highly recommend this one as well. It's a cool run. Another underrated DC run. Finally, over to Young Animal right now. Flying through these reviews without Siobhan here to argue with me about what's good and why I shouldn't say things are the best. Bug, The Adventures of Forager, issue number 3, written by Lee Alred, art by Michael Alred, and colors by Laura Alred, The Family Affair. Oh, sorry, Michael... That Michael and Lee are storytellers. This is the kind of big celebration of Kirby and the New Gods, told in like the classic kind of Allred Madman-esque fashion, where it's, you know, super fun and self-referential and goofy and silly, and there's all kinds of wacky characters, including Bug, the main character, who is the wackiest of all. But it's a really, really fun ride from start to finish. The art, there's some brilliant panel layouts in this book, and we're kind of seeing more and more of the mystery of Bug that he's trying to work out for himself unravel as the book continues. It's a fun issue. And the most exciting thing about the Young Animal books is the backup material. You always get these kind of bonus comics, and we got an essay last time. We got all kinds of crazy shit. And this one we get a return to the character of Midnight, which is a character created by the comics legend Jack Cole. And it's written and drawn by James Harvey in like a kind of throwback golden age, but like something you would honestly expect to see from Fantagraphics. It's called Midnight in the Phantom Zone, featuring this weird character who is like a big time radio announcer by day. And then he is a crime fighter who has like a vacuum gun, and his suit is equipped with light receptive Vanta black filaments. And yeah, he's Midnight by night. And this is him being sent to the Phantom Zone. So just like Action Comics, we have another character being sent to the Phantom Zone to solve a mystery. It's like only 3 pages long, and it was one of the best things I read this week. Midnight in the Phantom Zone. I know this is like against what everyone at a comic book store will tell you, but if you get a second, find this third issue of Bug, The Adventures of Forager, turn to the back and read those final 3 pages. Who knows, it might even convince you to read buy every single Young Animal book. So it really, comic book shops should be thanking me for that business. Oh, God damn it. I said I was meant to review Image books after Marvel, but I did DC next because it was the biggest pile. I just wanted to burn through it. Oh, well. Sorry to the god of dice. I disobeyed your actions. And to Jim. Jim, your dice rolls today were completely pointless and for nothing.
Oh, damn it.
Sorry. So 3 Image books to review for you today. We have Deadly Class, issue number 29, written by Rick Remender with Wes Craig and Jordan Boyd. This is by far for me like the best book Rick Remender is doing at the moment. It's the in short, it is a school for assassins, and it's still a high school drama, except everyone wants to kill each other, and you have like the goths and the metalheads and all the different kind of, it's set in the 80s, so you have all these every different kind of like kind of kid from the 80s, except they're also assassins. And he's woven quite an insane kind of murderous melodrama from the start. And, there are all kinds of twist characters you thought were dead are not dead anymore, and characters you thought shouldn't die are dead. So suck shit. But this is actually quite a fun and funny issue. We saw a metalhead and a goth character a freshman metalhead and one of the characters from the last kind of year of school, one of the original goths from last year, kind of going out and for a night of fun. And I thought this is a really great issue and kind of testament to Rick Remender's ability to blend the really heavy, murderous aspects of this issue and the kind of like schoolyard politics of this series with some really fun stuff of just teenagers goofing off. I love this book. It's so great. And Wes Craig is a fantastic cartoonist, and brilliant colors by Jordan Boyd. And also shouts to Russ Wooten for doing good letters. Regression this week by Cullen Bunn, Danny Luckett, and Marie Enger. This is a book about a guy who's like been taken over by bugs, and he keeps seeing visions of bugs, and this like weird bug god is killing heaps of people, and this book saw the bug god take over the guy. In short, I'm not going to be reading issue 4. Okay, next review. Black Cloud, issue number 4, written by Jason Latour, Ivan Brandon, Greg Hinkle, and Matt Wilson. That's an incredible team on a book that, again, I don't think this is lending itself to single issue format at all. Maybe I can't think of a book that has been more guilty of that. This book is absolutely a book you should be reading in trade. As you can tell, there's something very impressive building here. The art by Greg Hinkle is incredible. Such good art. He's such a good artist, and especially when matched with the great colors by Matt Wilson. But the storytelling is it's all over the place, but then you kind of expect it to be so wild and weird that when you realize they're referencing something that happened in issue 1, I kind of spent the majority of this issue going, oh, they're referencing something that I haven't seen or heard of before. And then I think they're referencing what happened in issue 1. I don't know. It's still really fun. So I'm never going to stick with it, but it definitely is like, if you've been thinking about picking this one up, wait for the trade to come out. Black Cloud. There definitely is something really great here. It just hasn't truly revealed itself just yet. So there's our Image reviews, our Marvel reviews, and our DC reviews, which leaves us with a couple of other comics published by other people. I didn't get around to reading a few books this week. I didn't read Darth Vader or The Sovereigns or Judge Dredd or American Gods or World Reader or Venom or Rocket Raccoon, but I may read them and get back to you next week. about what they were like. It's hard to read 50 books on your own in the cold while it rains. Grass Kings, issue number 5 through Boom Studios, written by Matt Kent with art by Tyler Jenkins. This has been quite a, you know, classic Matt Kent, very like getting into the heads and minds of the people who have chosen to live in this kind of gated off community from the rest of society and what those people outside of the society think of that gated community. But it's been like quite a quiet kind of somber series with the odd death splashed in between every you know, second issue or so. And then this issue just turns into all out war between those on the inside and those on the out. Like straight up war. There's planes and all kinds of heavy artillery and gunfights. It's an action issue where the previous issues, you know, you would kind of slowly read at a really nice pace as you got to know these characters and taking in Tyler Jenkins' beautiful watercolor art. This one, I burnt through this so fast because the action is addictive and it's told kind of using this device where the main character remembers telling a bedtime story to his daughter about, you know, a knight walking into war and as he himself walks into this war. It's a great issue. I love this series. One of my favorite issues of the week. Misfit City, number 3, also through Boom, through their Boom Box imprint. I think I might drop this. I don't know. I love that first issue so much. This is the kind of take on the Goonies, like a modern day take on the Goonies, in which you have a bunch of girls who work in who live in a town where a Goonies-esque movie was filmed in the 80s and lots of dickheads just show up to fuck their town up and because it was in the movie and they don't have respect for the people that live there. But then they themselves stumble upon a map and they're very, very slowly going to try and look for treasure at one point, but they're taking their sweet time doing it. There is a pretty fun seance. Seance. Thank you, Jim. Seance scene that I thought was kind of fun. And the art's good and the colors are good. Maybe I won't drop it. Maybe I will. You have to tune in to find out. What an incredible cliffhanger. God Shaper issue 4, also through Boom, written by Simon Spurrier, by Jonas Goonface. This is another book that, you know, is so crazy and bustling with all these weird, fun ideas that then also will just smack you in the face with something horrible happening. And that is exactly what happens to the main character in this issue. And I don't want to spoil the story at all, but I did not see what happened to him on the final pages coming at all. And I feel bad for the dude. This is a very cool issue in which hopefully you've heard our kind of reviews of it because I don't really want to go through the entire world, but it's, yeah, basically there are gods in this world and he is someone who can shape the gods into different kinds of gods for people. So everyone has their own god except the godless. So he is godless and he can also shape other people's gods. And he is also like, he also plays like weird music and people love his like weird music. And at the end of a really, really great show, he says, fuck it, and reveals to the crowd that he's a god shaper. And they do not respond very well to that news. This is a really good issue. Great issue of God Shaper. I'm over to do Dark Horse right now. And if you liked Grass Kings, you might also like Briggsland because it is also about a family, a collective of people living in a gated kind of their own a sovereign nation, if you will. This is Briggsland Lone Wolves, the second second volume, sorry, of Briggsland, written by Brian Wood with Mac Chater, Lee Lowridge, and Matthew Woodson. Two kind of like bushwalkers have accidentally stumbled across the borders of the community and they've been taken hostage while the community works out what to do with them. This first issue of this run opened with the FBI storming the community, so you know that shit is not going to end well for anybody. We're kind of learning more about the family and about the FBI's kind of thoughts towards the family. Finally, this week I read 2 issues of a Marguerite Bennett book, Animosity. She put out issue number 8 of Animosity, the regular series, and then issue number 2 of Animosity, The Rise, which is kind of like a side book in the same world that comes out with much less regularity, which is a bummer. Like, I actually quite enjoyed the second issue of this, which kind of Animosity, basically all the animals wake up and they can talk and they realize that that humans have had it too good and it's time to put a change in things. And a lot of humans die. This is the rise is all about a vet, and he's one of the few humans that the animals trust, and him trying to live alongside these animals, and it kind of gets towards quite an interesting point at the end of the story, and then suddenly it says to be continued in September. So we got to wait what two-ish months for a new issue of this. I kind of wish it came sooner, but hey, that's a small complaint. Animosity number 8. Which is the main series. I think this was one of the stronger issues of this. I loved the first issue of Animosity, and I think since then it just hasn't really been the book that I was hoping it would be. And this issue kind of dealt more into like the belief systems of animals, which I thought was quite compelling, and I think made for a quite a good issue. But I think overall I enjoyed the Rise issue 2 more than Animosity number 8. Cool. Oh my God. That is the end of me reviewing every single comic that I read last week by myself in this very, very welcoming office that doesn't matter if I talk loudly to myself in the corner. They just keep working, chuckling away at my terrible jokes. They're used to it. All that's left for me to do now is tell you what to pick up next week or this week. All the comics coming out this Wednesday. There are some pretty good ones. It's actually a bit of a smallish week, which is good for people who are hosting podcasts pretty much by themselves. hopefully next week we'll be a little less exasperated. But I highly recommend everyone pick up the third issue of Aliens Dead Orbit, which is a James Stokoe Aliens comic coming out through Dark Horse. Plus, Dark Horse are putting out the fourth and final issue of Shaolin Cowboy Who'll Stop the Rain, the aforementioned Jeff Darrow, his latest Shaolin Cowboy series, which I've enjoyed immensely. IDW are putting out DuckTales, a zero issue of DuckTales, which I'm not sure if it ties into the new animated series, which I saw an issue of, a teaser of from the D23 celebration stuff. It looks really cool. So hopefully it's the same kind of animation style that we saw in that. We also get two new Image number ones, which is always exciting. One's called Generation Gone. The other one's called Moonstruck. Which of them will be good? Which of them will sell out in 10 minutes? It could be either of them. We also get a second issue of the Image series, Kill the Minotaur, that we really enjoyed the first issue of. So looking forward to seeing that book progress. Astonishing X-Men is the big number one from Marvel, the Charles Soule X-Men book, which has a bunch of X-Men that are already in X-Men books, plus our boy, the one and only, what's his friggin' name, Jim? Who's the X-Men that we like that's in Astonishing? Phantom X. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim Bone. Phantom X is the diabolic kind of referencing that Italian kind of espionage kind of character that was so good in Uncanny X-Force by Rick Remender. Looking forward to seeing him return to X-Men books. I'm also very excited about the second issue of Secret Weapons through Valiant. I love the first issue of that. Looking forward to number 2. Thank you so much for listening to this strange episode of Serious Issues. If you have any feedback, do you like me just ranting to myself for the final half hour to an hour, or would you rather I find some poor soul to try and give me weird opinions about the comics that I've read that they haven't? let me know. You can get in touch with me online. You'll find me at facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast is our Facebook group, or just facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast is our Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter at LevDog, LevDawg. Give me some, moments of support. Say you can do it next time. Maybe have a cup of tea handy so you don't lose your voice at some point halfway through. That would help me a lot. You should also follow my good friend Siobhan Coombs, who just had a baby, at Siobhan CBG. That's SIOBHANCBG on Twitter and Instagram. And while you're there, drop her a line and say congratulations on baby Shatterstar Liefeld Jr. Welcome to the world. You can also find us on Twitter. The show is at serious_issues. And you can find us on Planet Broadcasting as well, the planetbcasting.com, the network that we're a part of. So thanks to those guys for all they do. And of course, thanks to King's Comics for having us, letting me just spill the insides of my mind while they try and work quietly around me. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week at Serious Issues with a new guest, a new Siobhan, a new Shinbone, a new Jimbone. Who will be the next bone? Stay tuned. Serious. Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.